going to start from the top of Pei Beis Amid Aleph from the third line. Okay, so the Gemara says, Amar le Rav Huna le Rabba Berei. Mai taima lo shchichas kameh de Rav Chista de mechad don shmaite. Rav Huna asked his son Rabba, how come you weren't learning by Rav Chista? Rav Chista was this like tremendous Talmud Chacham. He was very smart. How come you weren't learning by him? So Amar le, he said, what do you mean? Mai ezel legabe. Why should I go to Rav Chista? The chiazona legabe. Because every time I go to him, mostly b'mile da'alma. He starts talking to me about all this like nonsense. All this, you know, these things that are not really Torah related. For example, Amar le, he said to me, Man da ayol lebeis hakiseh, a person who goes to the bathroom, lo leisev behedja, you shouldn't sit down on a toilet right away, velo litrach tfei, and you shouldn't push too hard, da hai karkashta atlas shine yasiv, dilma mishtamta shine de karkashta v'asili de sakana. He starts telling me that if a person pushes too hard in the bathroom, it's going to start to cause some of the lining by the buttocks to fall away, and it could be dangerous, it could lead to some kind of injury with the intestines falling out or something like that. So he's like, well, you know, like, what's Rav Chista driving me crazy for with all this crazy medical advice when I could spend my time learning? So his father said to him, so Rav Huna said to his son, Rabba, Amar Lei, Hu Asik B'chaya De Briyasa V'ad Amar B'mila Da'alma, Kol Shekein Zil Agabe. He says, no, Rav Chista's, you know, telling you how to live. He's giving you health advice, medical advice. He says, Kal V'chomer, you should go listen to him, you know, because this stuff is very important. Okay. The Gemara says, Hayu Lufanav Tzror V'cheres. Let's say a person has an option to either wipe using rocks or using earthenware. Rav Huna Amar Mekaneach Again, we have a machlokes. Which of those two items is preferred to use to wipe with? So the Gemara says, "Meisvei ha'yulafan of tzror v'cheres mekaneach b'cheres ve'in mekaneach b'tzror tiyufta deravuna." This brisa says explicitly that if you have the choice, you should use cheres and not rocks, which seems to refute Ravuna. The Gemara says, "No, tirgama rafram bar papa kameh deravchista aliba deravuna ba'ogne chelim." That brisa was talking about the rims or the soft edges of a kli. In other words, Ravuna was only against using cheres or using earthenware when it was sharp. The earthenware was smoothed out, so then it was okay. Hayu lefanav tzror v'asavim. Let's say you have the choice of either using a rock or using grass to wipe with. So the Gemara says that's a further machlokas. Rav Chista v'Rav Hamnuna. Chad amar mekaneach b'tzror v'ein mekaneach v'asavim v'chad amar mekaneach v'asavim v'ein mekaneach b'tzror. Again, a machlokas. So the Gemara asks, Meisvei ha'mekaneach b'davar shehor shel letes bo shinav hatachtonos noshros. The Gemara says that if a person wipes themselves with something flammable, it can cause the bottom part of the rectum to fall out, which again can lead to things which are dangerous. So how can anyone suggest that you're permitted to wipe using grass? The grass is flammable. So the Gemara says, no, lo kashya, habalach and habi evasion. It depends if it's moist or if it's dry. If it's moist grass, then it's not flammable, and then it's permitted to wipe with. If it's dry, then it's a problem. The Gemara says, hanitzrach li panos ve'eno nifna. Let's say a person needs to use the bathroom, but decides not to. They decide to hold it in. So the Gemara says, how bad is that? Rav Chista v'Ravina. Chad amar ruach ra'a sholet espo, v'chad amar ruach zuhama sholet espo. The Gemara has two slightly different variations of how bad it is. One version of the Gemara is that an evil spirit will overtake you, and the other version of the Gemara is that a foul odor will overtake you. I'm not exactly sure if there's like a practical halakhic difference between these two. It's just, you know, these are different terms that we associate with a person who doesn't go to the bathroom when they have to. And the Gemara says, Tanya kamanda amar ruach zuhama sholet espo. We have a brisa that seems to support the second position, that if a person doesn't go to the bathroom when they have to, they're going to be overtaken with this foul stench. Tisanya, hanitzrach l'nekava v'ocha. Let's say a person has to use the bathroom, but instead they decide to eat. Dome l'sanu shehisikuhu al gav efro v'zoi tchilas ruach zuhama. They're compared to a stove or to an oven that basically you're adding more fuel to the fire. You're adding more ashes already to a person who needs to go to the bathroom. And the Braisa says that's the beginning of ruach zuhama. That's the beginning of the foul odor. So this brisa seems to support that second version of the Gemara. Okay, and then the Gemara says, "Hutzrach lipanos ve'eno yachol lipanos." What if a person wants to go to the bathroom but they can't? Let's say, for example, they're constipated. So Amar Rav Chista, yamud v'yeshiv. You should, you know, basically walk around, stand up, sit down. You know, in other words, move around to get, you know, to get the bowels moving. Rav Chanan min harda Amar yistalik litzdadin. Rav Chanan says you should, you know, move around from one place to another. If you try to use the bathroom in one spot, go to a different spot. Rav Hamnuna Amar yamashmish b'tzror ba. So makom, Rav Huna says you should use a rock to like manipulate your bowels. Again, we mentioned that briefly yesterday. V'rabbanan amre yasiach daito, and the Rabbanan say that you should distract yourself and think about something else. So amar le Rav Acha berei de Ravel or Rav Ashi kol shekein d'chimasach daito lo mefane. If you think about other things, it's going to be even harder to use the bathroom. So the Gemara says you're right. Amar le yasiach daito midvar macherim. It means that you shouldn't think about anything else other than the fact that you have to use the bathroom, and then hopefully the assumption is that you'll be able to go.
This all takes place on Shabbos, is that correct?
Well, no. I mean, this last part that we just did is not Shabbos specific. I mean, the general theme of this Gemara, again, the whole reason why we got into this whole discussion from yesterday's daf is because we were discussing, you know, am I allowed to carry the bathroom rocks or the crude toilet paper basically on Shabbos? You know, how big do they have to be, or how many of those rocks can I carry? So the Gemara kind of got very sidetracked with all these other bathroom related halachos, not all of which are specific to Shabbos. These are also some general ideas as we mentioned.
But would you be allowed to do this on Shabbos? Because you're not allowed to do medicinal stuff on Shabbos.
Well, the Gemara on yesterday's daf actually asked this question, because the Gemara on yesterday's daf said that a person is not allowed to manipulate their bowels on Shabbos. So the Gemara says, but like, I don't understand, if a person's constipated and they don't do anything about it, it's going to be dangerous. So the Gemara said on yesterday's daf that you should use a shinui, right? If you use a shinui, then you could kind of manipulate your bowels in such a way where you'll be able to go to the bathroom. Okay, the Gemara then gives one last story about this. Amar Rav Yirmiyahu Midifti Ledidi Chazi Liahu Taya Dekam Biyasev Dekam Biyasev Adeshafa Chikadera. Rav Yirmiyahu Midifti said he once saw this Arab merchant who apparently had some severe constipation, and he walked around a lot, and then he said, you know, eventually everything came pouring out of him, to put it nicely. Okay, Gemara says Tana Rabbanan Hanichdas Lesudas Kev. If a person is going to like a real to like a regular meal, Yahalich Yud Pa'amim Shal Arba Arba Amos Va'Amrila Dalit Pa'amim Shal Eser Amos V'Nifne V'Nichnas Yashav B'Mekomo. Basically, you should walk around. Either you should walk around 4 Amos 10 times, or 10 Amos 4 times. Until you're able to go to the bathroom, and then once you use the bathroom, then you can go in, and have your meal. Okay, so this is this next Mishnah, and until the end of the parak, which is coming up soon, is the last of the whole how much of item X do I need to carry to be chayev. So this is going to be the end of this topic for now. Okay, so the Mishnah says Cheres k'dei litin bin patzim lachavero divrei Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Meir Omer k'dei lachtos bo esaur, Rabbi Yossi Omer k'dei lekabel bo revius. The Mishnah presents three different opinions regarding the amount of earthenware that one must carry on Shabbos to be chayev. According to Rabbi Yehuda, it's enough earthenware to put in between pillars. Let's say you have a bunch of like posts or pillars that you're stacking on the ground. So you would like layer them with this earthenware to prevent them from like scratching each other or whatever it was. So however much earthenware you would need for that, that's Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Meir says however much earthenware you would need to like stoke a flame to ignite a fire. And Rabbi Yossi says however much earthenware you would need to hold at least a revius, which is about 3.3 ounces of liquid. Amar Rabbi Meir, afal pi she'en rai ledavar zecher ledavar, lo yimtzav v'machti so cheres lachtos ish miyakud. So Rabbi Meir quotes a remez, has an allusion to his position, the idea that it's enough earthenware to ignite a fire, from a pasuk from Sefer Yeshaya. The pasuk says, again, the context of these psukim in Yeshaya is discussing the fact that Hashem says to Yeshaya Hanavi, he says that in the future, Bnei Yisrael, they're not going to have access to any kelim, they're going to be poor, they're not going to have access to anything, and it says that you're not going to find in your earthenware kelim lachtos ish miyakud. You're not going to find earthenware to ignite a fire. The implication is that the purpose of earthenware is to ignite a fire. That would seem to support Rabbi Meir. So Amar le Rabbi Yossi, no, he says Misham Raya Velachsof Mayim Yigever. Rabbi Yossi says to Rabbi Meir, that's not a proof. He says, look at the next three words in that same pasuk. The last three words of the pasuk say Velachsof Mayim Yigever, meaning that the purpose of the earthenware is to store water, is to use as a kli for water, meaning to hold a revius. So if anything, Rabbi Yossi's position seems to be more accurate based on this pasuk. So the Gemara now says, skipping the parentheses, Mistabra Shiura.
To refresh myself.
Yes.
All of these shiurim are to make you chayav d'oraisa, correct?
Correct. Yes.
But you would still be chayav d'rabbanan for any of these minimum?
That's a good question. That's a good question. The Gemara does not specifically address that issue about, right, is there like a lesser threshold for d'rabbanans? That might be reflective of a general question, which we're not really addressing in this Gemara, about what's called Chatzi Shir. The Gemara in Yuma has a whole discussion about this. Let's say, for example, we know that on Yom Kippur, right, the shir that a person has to eat b'chayv is a koseves. So let's say you eat half that shir, right? So again, we spoke a lot about in the beginning of the previous parak about what happens if I had half of the melacha and another half in different lapses of awareness. That was a whole question regarding a karban. I think the assumption would be that if you do any sort of carrying of any sort, of any amount, in a Rosh Hashanah Rabban, let's say, then it's going to be at least Rabbanan, I think. Again, you're right. These shiurim, I think, are reflective of Deoraisas because they reflect a certain level of chashivas. But you're right, the Gemara does not specifically address that question. Okay. So the Gemara says, Mistabra shiura de Rabbi Yossi nafish, umikra shiura de Rabbi Meir nafish. So logically, Rabbi Yossi's position, again, Rabbi Yossi being the one who said in the Mishnah that the shear for earthenware has to be enough to hold a revius, his position makes sense logically, whereas Rabbi Meir's position seems to be more accurate based on the pasuk that we quoted in the Mishnah from Yeshaya. So the Gemara explains, the Isalka Daitach Shiura de Rabbi Yossi nafish, because if you're going to tell me that Rabbi Yossi's shear, in other words, of holding in other words, enough earthenware to hold a revius, if that's the larger shear, then Layat Labimana Zutra, Vahadir Layat Labimana Rabba. The Gemara says that if that were true, if Rabbi Yossi's shear in the Mishnah, meaning enough earthenware to hold a revius, was the largest shear, was larger than enough earthenware to ignite a fire, so then then the pasuk in Yeshaya wouldn't make any sense. Because what the pasuk is basically saying, again, as we mentioned, is that Hashem is saying, oh, you know, B'nai Yisrael in the future won't have access to any kalim. So the pasuk in Yeshaya starts out by mentioning you won't have access to kalim to ignite a fire, and you won't even have access to kalim to hold water, right? To hold a revius of water. Now, if Rabbi Yossi was really the larger shear, then the pasuk should have been read in the opposite way, meaning you won't even have access to this or to that. In other words, why would the pasuk start out by saying you won't have access to earthenware for a fire, which is a lesser shear, and you won't even have access to something which is a larger shear? Meaning, if you don't have access to earthenware for a smaller amount, you're obviously not going to have access to the earthenware for the larger amount either, right? So, in other words, if Rabbi Yossi's shear was really the larger shear, then the pasuk in Yeshaya should have been the opposite. It should have mentioned the fact that you won't find earthenware to hold water before you won't find earthenware to ignite a fire. So the Gemara says, in fact, Amar Abai Masnisa Nami Lachtos Ishmi Akira Gedola, and Abai adds that the Mishnah, the Brisa, also seemed to support this position that the purpose of earthenware was to ignite a large fire. So it seems to be that Reb Meir's position seems to be correct. But the Gemara says, Reb Yossi Omer Misham Raya, Shapir Kamar Le Reb Yossi Le Rabbi Meir. So the Gemara picks up from where the Mishnah left off, where Reb Yossi was responding to Reb Meir's proof from the Pasuk in Yeshaya. Reb Meir says, oh, the Pasuk in Yeshaya describes the earthenware as being used to ignite a fire, to which Reb Yossi said, but look at the last three words of that Pasuk, where it says, V'lach Sof Maya Migeveh, where the purpose of the earthenware is to store liquids. So the question is, how does Reb Meir respond to that proof? It sounds like a good question against Reb Meir. So the Gemara says, V'Rabbi Meir, Lo Mi Boya Ka'amar, Lo Mi Boya Midi Dechashiv L'Inshe De Lo L'Shtakach Lei, Ela Afilu Midi De Lo Chashiv L'Inshe Lo L'Shtakach Lei. According to Reb Meir, the Pasuk in Yeshaya was really being formulated for dramatic effect. In other words, Hashem was basically saying to B'nai Yisrael, in other words, not only are you not going to have access to earthenware for like a Chashiv purpose, namely to ignite a fire, you won't even have access to earthenware for a lower purpose, like holding liquid. So in other words, Reb Meir says that, Reb Meir says, don't ask me a question from the Pasuk in Yeshaya because it's formulated that way. It was just formulated in almost a backwards way, almost for like dramatic effect. But it wasn't actually to teach you that the shear of holding water is larger than that of igniting a fire. If anything, it's actually the opposite. Okay, Hajar Alecha Motziyayin. Okay, so this is the end of the last, 10 or so daf that we've been spending on very, very technical questions about how much of different items do we have to carry out. So now that we're done with one very technical topic, we're going to move into another very, very technical topic, but a completely different one. And the next perek is going to begin having a very technical discussion regarding the status of Tuma of Avodah Zarah. Now, we don't usually associate Avodah Zarah as something of Tuma. Like, Tuma usually is Azav, Azava, Anida, Asheretz, right? Like a mace, a dead body, right? Those kinds of things usually invoke images of Tuma. But as we'll see, Midrabanan, Chazal instituted for a variety of reasons that Avodah Zarah also has a certain measure of Tuma, and much of this perek is going to be spent trying to figure out to what degree of Tuma did Chazal institute on Avodah Zarah. That's going to be as how this perek begins. So the Mishnah starts at Amar Rabbi Akiva, Minayin LaAvodah Zarah Shem.
Yeah. I just got a question.
Yeah, go ahead.
So basically, the rabbis instituted Tuma to basically keep you away from the Avodah Zarah, correct?
Well, sort of.
That's the goal, right?
Yeah, that seems to be the underline. Yeah.
So why did they choose the medium of Tuma? Why don't they say that Avodah Zarah is Muksa? Or let's say Avodah Zarah is...
So two things. First of all, just completely parenthetically.
Well, still Rabbanan, yeah. So they what? Probably wouldn't have chosen Muksa.
Well, okay, right. So that's right. So that was going to be the first point that I was going to make. Right, that was the first point I was going to make, is the Muksa is the Rabbanan. Although the truth is, just completely parenthetically, the Gemara actually often does use the term Muksa in association with Avodah Zarah, but not in the way that we use the word Muktzah like by Hilchos Shabbos, but Muktzah as in something which was designated for idol worship. Again, that's completely parenthetical, but I think the idea being, again, we'll see as we go along in this perek that the Mishnayos and the Gemara are going to be quoting Psukim throughout from Tanakh that seem to support this idea that Avodah Zarah is compared in a certain regard to Tumah. So we'll see what the basis for this is, but it's not such a stretch as we'll see from the Psukim that the Gemara is going to quote. Okay.
Rabbi,
yeah.
What is the connection between Avodah Zarah and Shabbos?
Oh, okay. Excellent question. You're asking why is this parak here and not a Maseches Avodah Zarah, basically, right? Is that what you're asking?
Exactly.
Okay, so good. So Rashi addresses that, and the answer, as is the answer for many of these types of questions, is it kind of snuck its way in here completely parenthetically, and Rashi, the first Rashi in this parak basically says, because they're going to be Mishnayos down the line in this parak and segueing into future prakim that are more related to Shabbos, that are authored by Rabbi Akiva, that are more Shabbos-oriented, so this parak kind of almost snuck in here by accident. You're right. And in fact, as we'll see in the beginning of the Gemara has to kind of lay some of the groundwork or some of the basic halachos of Avodah Zarah, because again, we're not learning Maseches Avodah Zarah, we're learning Maseches Shabbos. So a lot of these halachos kind of almost snuck in here by accident, as we'll see. Okay, so the Mishnah says, Amar Rabbi Akiva, Minayim Avodah Zarah Shematamba B'masa Kenida, Shenemar Tizrim Kimodavat Se Tomarlo, Ma Nida Metamba B'masa, Af Avodah Zarah Metamba B'masa. So comes Rabbi Akiva and poses the question, from where do we know that Avodah Zarah is compared in a certain regard to Tumas Nida, specifically in regards to carrying? Now we know, just to give a very basic overview of Hilchos Tumah, again, you might remember this back from earlier in Masechah Shabbos, right? There are three basic types or three ways in which Tumah can be transferred. There's what's called Tumas Maga, by touching something, tummy, touching a sheretz, touching a dead body, touching a person who's a zav anida, etc. There's carrying, when I can carry something even without touching. Let's say I carry a sheretz in a container, I carry a dead body in a coffin, let's say, right, without actually touching it. That's called tumas masa. And then there's a unique type of tumah called tumas ohel, right, which only applies to a dead body. Right? If I'm in the same building, tent, room, etc. as a dead body, then I become tummy. But again, that's a unique tumah that we're not going to really focus on right now. So how do we know that Avodah Zarah is similar to nida in that it's also metame b'masa? In other words, if let's say I carry an idol without touching, let's say I carry an idol in a bag, for example, right? So how do I know that I would become tame? So the Gemara cites a pasuk from Sefer, I'm sorry, the Mishnah cites a pasuk from Sefer Yeshaya that says, Tizreim kemo dava se tomarlo. Tizreim kemo dava. So the word dava in the Torah always refers to anida, right? In fact, the last pasuk in Parshas Metzora says, v'hadava benida asa. So the word dava means a woman who's anida, who's cast away. The psukim you are describing or is discussing this, the way that a Kaddish Baruch Hu relates to Avodah Zarah. It says Tizrim Kimodava Tse Tomarlo. You're like Anida, and tell the idol to get out. Tell the idol to leave the premises, basically. So you see from this pasuk in Yeshaya that there's an implicit comparison between Nida and Avodah Zarah. So now, before we get into all the nitty-gritty details here, the Gemara just has to kind of give us some basic information or background about Avodah Zarah. Tanad Hasan, we have a Mishnah in Maseches Avodah Zarah. Misha Haya Beso Samachla Avodah Zarah Vinafal, Asur Livnosa. Let's say a person has a house that borders a house of idol worship. Let's say your house was there first, and then, I don't know, some religion decided to build their house of idol worship next to your house. And then what happens? Your house collapsed. Your house fell down, and now you want to rebuild it. The Mishnah in Avodah Zarah says that you're not allowed to do that. You're not allowed to rebuild it, because what you're basically doing is you're essentially enhancing the base of Avodah Zarah, which is a problem. So the question, obviously, is, so then Kate said, yeah, said, like, what are you supposed to do? How are you supposed to rebuild your house? So the Mishnah says, so the Gemara says, no, the Gemara says, Konis Lesoch Shalom Dalar Amazuvona. All you have to do is back away four amos back into your property. In other words, instead of building it where it used to be, just move it four amos away and then build your house, you know, a little bit farther away from where it was initially. Then the Gemara continues, Haya shalo v'shal Avodah Zarah nidon mechza al mechza. Let's say, for example, your house and the house of Avodah Zarah, for example, were occupying literally the same wall. Let's say you had half ownership, you know, you had a 50-50 ownership of the wall together with the base of Avodah Zarah. So then the Gemara says, again, based on the Mishnah in Maseches Avodah Zarah, that basically we view that as if it's a half and half. In other words, if you own the wall together with the base of Avodah Zarah, so again, Chazal wanted to make sure that we distance ourselves at least four amos from the base of Avodah Zarah, and therefore we view it as if you actually have a part ownership in that wall, and Chazal will therefore insist that you rebuild your house at least four amos away from the base of Avodah Zarah. And then the Gemara continues, Avana ve'etza v'afarav mitamin kisheret shenemer shaket t'shaket zedu. The stones and the bricks and the wood and the dust and all that stuff from the house of Avodah Zarah, they have the status of Tumas Sheretz. How do we know that? Because the Gemara quotes a pasuk in Parshas Ikev that describes Avodah Zarah with the words Shaketz Teshaketzenu. It's like an abomination. So we know that in Chumash, many times, whenever the Torah is describing Shratzim, it also uses this term Shaketz, right? It says, Lo Teshaketzu Es Nafsho Seichem. Don't defile yourself, don't disgust yourself, right? So this term Shaketz is associated with Sheretz, and that since the Torah uses a term by Avodah Zarah, so that's how the Gemara knows that the bricks, the stones, the dust, etc., from a base of Avodah Zarah have the status of Tumas Sheretz. That's according to the Chachamim. However, Rabbi Akiva Omer Kenida Shenemar Tizrim Kibo Dava Manida Metama B'Masa Av Avodah Zarah Metama B'Masa. So now the Gemara goes back to Rabbi Akiva's position from the Mishnah, where Rabbi Akiva told us that Avodah Zarah is equated with Tumas Nida, in that if you carry an idol, even if you don't touch it, you will become Tamei, much the same way that you will become Tamei for carrying a woman who is a Nida. So again, we have a Machlokas here, what the status of the Avodah Zarah is. Is it more like a Nida, or is it more like a Sheretz? So the Gemara just points out parenthetically here, Amar Rabba, Tizrim de Amar Kra, Nachrinu Minach Kizar, Se Tomar Lo, He Kanes Al Tomar Lo. Rabba is giving almost like a homiletical, like a drush on the Pasuk from Yeshaya that we quoted before. Tizrim, when the Pasuk says Tizrim Kemodava, what the Pasuk is basically telling you is that you should alienate yourself from the idols. You should distance yourself from the Avodah Zarah, and the Pasuk says, Se Tomar Lo, tell the idols, tell the idol worshippers to get out, to not be associated with the Jewish people, and don't tell them hikaneis, don't tell them to come in and to associate with us. Okay. The Amar Rabba, Bimasa Dhule Amalo Plige de Matama. So now this is gonna really lead us all the way on to tomorrow's daf. So it's this part of the Gemara is very, very technical, so it's just important to kind of to understand the background. So I'll try to explain it as we go along. So as we'll see, there's gonna be a machlokes here between Rabba and Rabbi Eliezer about the machlokes between Rabbi Akiva and the Chacham. So the Gemara does this often, where the Gemara will have a machlokes about a machlokes. So we'll see there's gonna be different versions of the machlokes Rabbi Akiva and the Chacham. So we're gonna start out with Rabba. So Rabba says like this, Bimasa Dhule Amalo Plige de Matama. Rabba says everyone agrees, meaning both Rabbi Akiva and the Chachamim agree that Avodah Zarah is metame b'masa. If I carry the idol, I'm going to become tame. Why? Da iskash l'nida. Because everyone agrees, according to Rabbah at least, that to a certain extent, Avodah Zarah is compared to nida. Ki pligi be'evin mesama. The machlokas is regarding what's called evin mesama. Evin mesama means, I have, let's say, this gigantic boulder, this huge rock, and let's say, for example, I have a kli underneath the rock, and on top of the rock I have an idol, let's say, right? So normally you would say, well, I have this gigantic rock here, so usually there's no tuma that spreads when there's a gigantic rock, because a rock is not mekabel tuma, and usually when you have an item which is not mekabel tuma in the middle, it acts as a chatzitza, it prevents tuma from spreading generally. However, Chazal made a special takana that if, let's say, for example, a person who's a zav or a zava or a nida sits on one of these rocks and there's a kli underneath, the kli becomes tuma no matter what, even though there's a huge separation between the person and the kli. And the Gemara says, the machlokas is, do we say the same thing for Avodah Zarah? Meaning everyone agrees, let's say, for example, a sheretz, let's say there's a dead sheretz on top of that rock, a huge rock, there's a kli underneath, then the kli is not tuma, because this concept of evan mesama was only instituted specifically for tuma like zav, zav and nida, not for tuma sheretz. The question, machlokas here is, yeah.
Is evan mesama potent for tuma met?
That's a good question. The Gemara, this Gemara does not address that. I believe that it is. If I remember correctly, I think the din of Evan Mesama is specific, is unique for Tuma like Zav Zav and Nida. The question is going to be, does that also apply to Avodah Zarah? That's going to be the machlokas here, right? So the Gemara says, Ki plige be'evin mesama. Rabbi Akiva savar kenida, manida metama be'evin mesama, af Avodah Zarah metama be'evin mesama, v'rabbanan savri kesheretz, ma sheretz lo metame be'evin mesama, af Avodah Zarah lo metame be'evin mesama. Basically, the machlokas is, do we say that Avodah Zarah is metame with an evin mesama, but you know, when it's on the top of the big rock, do we compare it to nida, or do we compare it to sheretz? And the question now becomes, Ula Rabbi Akiva l'may hilchasa iskash l'sheretz. According to Rabbi Akiva, again, Rabbi Akiva was the one who said that fundamentally we compare Avodah Zarah to Nida. So then in what regard does he compare Avodah Zarah to Tumas Sheretz? So the Gemara says, Lim Sham Sheha, that's regarding the accessories of the idol. So for example, let's say you put the idol on top of a pedestal, right? So the pedestal is called Misham Sheha Avodah Zarah. It's something which services the idol. So Rabbi Akiva says, those things that service the idol would not be Metame Be'evin Mesama. So for example, if let's say on top of a humongous rock I had a pedestal that I used to support toward an idol and there was a kli underneath that rock, then the kli would not become tameh. But according to Rabbi Akiva, if there was an actual idol on top of that rock, so then Rabbi Akiva says that the kelim underneath would become tameh, but the Rabbanan would disagree, because again, that's the machlokas regarding Evan Mesama. Do we invoke this concept called Evan Mesama by Avodah Zarah or not? So that's how Rabbi Akiva would explain how Tumas Sheretz applies to Avodah Zarah, specifically regarding the Meshamshe Avodah Zarah, the accessories of Avodah Zarah. But the question, of course, is Ula Rabbanan Lamai Hilchasa Iskash Linida. For what purpose do the Rabbanan compare Avodah Zarah to Nida if they fundamentally think it's really compared to Tumas Sheretz? So the Gemara says Lamasa, the only advantage or the only chumra that we gain from comparing Avodah Zarah to Nida is the fact that we now have this concept of Tumas Masa, the fact that if I carry the idol even without touching it, I become Tameh. So the Gemara has what seems to be a pretty obvious question, the Loksha Rachamana Linevela. The Gemara says, why do you have to go so far out on a limb and say, oh, I'm going to compare Avodah Zarah to Nida because I want to learn this additional halacha called Tumas Masa, that when I carry the idol, I become Tameh? The Gemara says, you don't have to run all the way to Tumas Nida to learn that. You can derive that from Tumas Nevela. If a person carries a Nevela, a carcass of an animal that died without proper shechita, let's say, for example, right, so then you would also become Tameh by doing that. So, and that case is much more advantageous to learn from because it doesn't have this additional chumrah of Evan Mesama. Remember, again, Tumas Nida, everyone agrees that Tumas Nida has Evan Mesama. That's right, that's obvious. The question that we raise in the Gemara is whether we compare Avodah Zarah to Nida or to Sheretz. That was the machlokas between Rabbi Akiva and the Chachamim, right, to help us understand whether Evan Mesama should apply to Avodah Zarah. So the question is, if all the Chachamim are interested in learning about Avodah Zarah is the fact that it makes you tameh when you carry it, right, Tumas Masa, it would have been much more prescient to learn that from Nevela, because Nevela also has Tumas Masa, also makes you tameh when you carry it, but it's much less of a chiddush than Tumas Nida, because Tumas Nida also has this chiddush called Evan Mesama, which that chiddush does not exist by Nevela, right? So in other words, if the Chachamim are really trying to convince us that there is no Evan Mesama by Avodah Zarah, they picked a terrible example to learn from. Why would you derive from Nida, where we know Evan Mesama exists, if all you're trying to teach us is that there's Tumas Masa, that you become tameh by carrying? Just learn that from Nevela, where I can also learn Tumas Masa, and I don't have to contend with this problem of Evan Mesama. It doesn't apply by Nevela. So the Gemara says, you're right. The Gemara says, Enachanami, really, we could have derived from Nevela. The Gemara says the reason why the Chachamim felt compelled to derive the Tumah of Avodah Zarah from Anida specifically was for a completely different reason, was because of what's called Tumas Eivarim. We're going to see the Gemara is going to raise this question on tomorrow's daf regarding whether Avodah Zarah is Metame Le'ivar. What that means is, again, let's say, for example, in the case of Anida, let's say a woman who's Anida is leaning one of her hands on a Kli. So the Gemara raises a question, does that Kli become Tummy? Meaning, again, everyone agrees if Anida sits on a chair, if she lies on a bed, that's classic Tumas Medris, right? That's for sure is going to become Tameh. The question is, if she leans her hand on a Kli, does that become Tameh? What would the parallel case to that be by Avodah Zarah? So let's say, for example, part of the idol is leaning on a Kli, not the whole thing. It's not standing up on a base, on a pedestal. You know, part of it is leaning on a Kli. So that's a suffix in the Gemara, whether it would become Tameh. So the Gemara says that because the Chachamim wanted to get across the point that Avodah Zarah is metame le'ivarin, that if even part of it is leaning on a Kli, the Kli becomes Tameh, that's why they compared it to Nida, because they wanted to make sure that that point got across. If you were only going to compare it to Nevela, you would not have learned that halacha. So the Gemara has almost like a textual problem with this. The Gemara says, Ve'elo ha'debayir of Chama bar Guria, Avodah Zarah yeshna le'ivarin o ena le'ivarin, tifshut le'mehad le'rabbanan ena le'ivarin. The Gemara says, again, this is really going to be more focus of tomorrow's daf, which is the question that Rav Chama bar Guria will raise on tomorrow's daf about this very issue, about whether Avodah Zarah is metame le'ivarim, about whether an idol where part of it is leaning on a Kli, will that Kli become Tameh? So the Gemara says, I don't understand. Why is Rav Chama bar Guria raising this question? And in fact, we'll see on tomorrow's daf, he leaves that question unresolved. The Gemara says, our Gemara seems to be an open and shut answer to that question. Our Gemara says explicitly that according to the Rabbanan, Avodah Zarah is in fact metame le'ivarin, right? If I lean part of the idol on a Kli, the Kli becomes Tameh. So the question is, how come on tomorrow's daf, Rav Chama bar Guria raises this as a question and doesn't resolve it? This Gemara seems to be a clear answer to that question. So the Gemara says no. The Gemara says Rav Chama bar Guria, Aliba de Rabbi Akiva Boyla. The Gemara says, no, you're right. That question on tomorrow's daf of Rav Chama Bar Guria was only being asked within the opinion of Rabbi Akiva. You're right. Meaning, according to the Rabbanan, there is no question. According to the Rabbanan, Avodah Zarah is 100% Metame Le'Evarim. If part of it leans on a Kli, the Kli becomes Tame without question. The only question is, how would Rabbi Akiva explain that? Okay, so before we go on to the next point, I just want to summarize, because I know this is get very technical and confusing. So this, everything we've done up until now is all within the position of Rabbah. This is how Rabbah understands the machlokas between Rabbi Akiva and the Chachamim. Again, but whether Avodah Zarah is more similar to Sheretz or more similar to Nida. So we said that the Chachamim hold it's more like Sheretz and Rabbi Akiva hold it's more like Nida. And we said the machlokas is, does the concept of Evan Mesama apply to Avodah Zarah? Because again, if you compare it to Sheretz, then it does not. If you compare it to Nida, then it does. Then we said, okay, so according to Rabbi Akiva, why do we compare Avodah Zarah to Sheretz? We said the answer for that was because of the Mishamshe Avodah Zarah, the accessories, like the pedestal that holds the Avodah Zarah. And then we said, so then why did the Chachamim derive from Nida? We said, oh, because of Tumas Masa, to teach you that when I carry the idol, you become Tameh. Then the Gemara asked, okay, but then if that's the case, why not derive from Nevela? Because Nevela also makes you Tameh by carrying, but it's much less of a Chiddush because there's no Evan Masama. So we said, oh, because of this concept that Avodah Zarah is Metameh Le'Ivarin, right, because it makes you Tameh when part of it leans on the Kli. Then we said, what about the question of Rav Chama Bar Guria on tomorrow's daf? How come this is not an answer? We said, you're right that the Rabbanan hold that it's Tameh, except that according to Rabbi Akiva, it's still a Suffolk. Okay, so that's like the basic flow all within Rabbah. Yeah, question, Yaakov?
Yeah,
Rabbi,
I think
it
means that the part is decapitated, not
linked. Well, in the case, let me see here. Well, okay, so at least in the case of the Nida, I think, so you might be right, you might be right by the Avodah Zarah. I think in the case of the Nida, though, I think it's that the woman is, again, I think I recall seeing this in one of the Rishonim. I don't remember who I saw this in, but I think one of the Rishonim said that, but at least for the case of the Nida, her hand was leaning on it. I think you're right by the Avodah Zarah, that it is where the piece of the idol was decapitated. But again, it's leaning on top of something. It's leaning on top of a Kli, okay? So everything we said until now is all within the position of Rabbah. But as we mentioned before, there's another opinion to all of this. So now we're going to see Rabbi Eliezer, who is going to have a different way to formulate the machlokas between Rabbi Akiva and the Chachamim. For Rabbi Eliezer, Amar, be'evin mesama d'chulei ama lo pligi d'lo metama. According to Rabbi Eliezer, everyone agrees. Both Rabbi Akiva and the Chachamim agree that Avodah Zarah is not metame be'evin mesama. That was never the machlokas, according to Rabbi Eliezer. Ki pligi b'masa, Rabbi Akiva savar kinida, ma nida metama b'masa, af Avodah Zarah metama b'masa, for Rabbanan savri k'sheretz, ma sheretz lo metama b'masa, af Avodah Zarah lo metama b'masa. According to Rabbi Eliezer, the machlokas between Rabbi Akiva and the Chachamim was whether Avodah Zarah is metame b'masa. Does it make you tame by carrying? And again, that same question, do we compare it to Sheretz or do we compare it to Nida? Because again, Nida makes you tame when you carry it and Sheretz does not. And again, the Gemara has the same question we had before. But Rabbi Akiva, l'may hilchasa iskash l'sheretz. According to Rabbi Akiva, who thinks that fundamentally Avodah Zarah is more like Nida, then why are we comparing it to Sheretz? So the Gemara says, l'misham sheha, again, to teach you that the accessories of Avodah Zarah make you tame, in other words, are more like Sheretz. For Rabbanan, l'may hilchasa iskash l'nida, why do the Rabbanan and compare it to Nida, Manida ain't a leivarim, Avodah Zarah ain't a leivarim. The same idea we mentioned before, because of this Tumas Eivarim, if part of the limb gets, either leaning on a clear, gets decapitated. So the Gemara says, Rabbi Akiva, Lamai Hilchasa Iskash Lenida, Lamasa. So now the Gemara is asking the same question we had on the Rabbana before on Rabbi Akiva. And again, this is all in Rabbi Eliezer's version. According to Rabbi Akiva, why do we compare Tumas Avodah Zarah to Nida? So the Gemara says it must be Lamasa, to teach me that if I carry the idol, I become Tameh. So the Gemara asks the same question we had before, Lokshir Lenevela. Why are we running to Tumas Nida to derive the fact that you become Tameh for carrying the Avodah Zarah? Why not learn that from Nevela? Because Nevela also makes you Tameh when you carry, and it doesn't have the bigger Chiddush of Evan Mesama. So the Gemara says, Enechanami, Elama Nida in Eleivarin, Avodah Zarah in Eleivarin. The same answer we gave before, to teach me that a limb, that a piece of the idol, a piece of the woman's hand is not going to make you tame. So the Gemara has the same question again. In this version of the Gemara, in Rabbi Eliezer's version of the Gemara, it comes out that the question of Rav Chama Bar Guria that he's posing regarding whether Avodah Zarah is metame le'ivarim or not is a valid question even according to Rabbi Akiva. In Rabbah's version, that was only, I'm sorry, it's a valid question even according to the Rabbanan. In Rabbah's version, that question the Gemara answered was only valid according to according to Rabbi Akiva, whereas the Rabbanan said explicitly that, you know, that tuma is metame le'ivarim. But now in this version, Rabbi Eliezer's version, the question is a valid question according to both opinions. So the Gemara says no. Rav Chama bar Gurya kerabba masne uvoila libe de Rabbi Akiva. It's very possible, says the Gemara, that Rav Chama bar Gurya actually accepted Rabba's formulation of the Gemara. He rejected Rabbi Eliezer, and therefore the question was in fact posed only according to Rabbi Akiva. So in other words, again, remember, we're going to talk more about this question tomorrow on Amud Beis of Pei Gimel. So we'll see hopefully more about this tomorrow. But the Gemara's basic answer is that Rav Chama bar Gurya's question was presupposing that Rabba's formulation of the Gemara was correct, and if that's the case, that means that the question was being fundamentally only asked according to Rabbi Akiva. Okay, so.